This week in KMA Land, Page County races previewed in midterm caucuses. Atlantic school staff member's resignation draws controversy. Dueling carbon pipeline bills circulate statehouse. Lawmakers and educators weigh in on school funding issues. And Page County supervisors ponder clock tower bids. I'm Mike Peterson. Though it's only February, some interesting June primary races are shaping up in Page County. Attendees at a Page County Republican midterm caucus at Shenandoah High School Monday night had a chance to meet and hear from some of the candidates running for county supervisor in June. After a redistricting process last year to expand the board of supervisors from 3 to 5 members, all 5 seats are up for election this year with staggered terms. 6 candidates were circulating nomination papers in Shenandoah, including 2 challengers seeking the GOP nomination for the county's new District 3 seat, which encompassed much of the rural portion of the county, Seth Stimson and Jeffrey J. Brownfield. Stimson's brother Andrew read from a letter to the various groups throughout the evening. In the statement, Stimson says his past work in leadership roles with his church and a large landscaping business in Kansas City, along with operating his own business, gives him a strong background for a county supervisor role.
I understand budgets, staffing, equipment planning, and accountability. I've spent thousands of hours doing the work myself and just as many hours making difficult decisions. Decisions that affect people, families, and livelihoods. I'm running for Page County Supervisor District 3, the rural district, because I believe county government should reflect these same values: hungry, humble, and teachable. Hungry to improve and serve the county better. Humble enough to remember leadership is service, not power. Teachable enough to listen carefully and learn while holding firmly to core values.
Also Monday, current District 2 Supervisor Todd Maher was circulating papers to retain his position on the board. A longtime employee at Pella Corporation in Shenandoah, Maher has served on the board for the past 4 years. Maher says he hopes to continue building upon the progress made, particularly over the past year.
We've made a lot of progress this past year, and with the new jail and some of the new things come along, so I'd kind of like to, you know, keep working and improving things in Page County, and hopefully I get the chance to serve again.
And former Supervisor Alan Armstrong announced his intentions to run for the updated District 1 position of the board and was circulating papers for that. Armstrong says he looks forward to potentially working with a 5-person supervisor board.
It'll make things a little bit more interesting, but it should spread the workload out a little bit. There was a lot of weeks where it seemed like all I did was go to meeting after meeting after meeting, and that wasn't always necessarily with the county. There's a lot of things in our area that we have to be responsible with, and a lot of preparation and work. So, yep, pretty excited about it.
Other individuals circulating papers for a supervisor in Shenandoah included Supervisor Brian Rogers, who is seeking the Republican nomination for the District 5 seat, and Jay Leininger seeking the GOP nomination for District 4. Individuals seeking to place their name on the June primary ballot can return nomination papers to their respective county auditor's office between March 2nd and 20th. After the drawing of lots at the supervisors' meeting last month, individuals elected to Districts 1 and 3 this year would serve a 2-year term, while candidates elected to Districts 2, 4, and 5 would serve a 4-year term. Controversy gripped the Atlantic School District this week over a staff member's resignation. The Atlantic School Board originally scheduled a meeting to act on the resignation of high school counselor Jesse McCann, who has been placed on paid leave in front of a crowded conference room. School Board President Josh McLaren, however, read a statement when the meeting was scheduled to begin at 7:30 Wednesday morning. McLaren says after careful consideration as board president, he decided Tuesday night the board would not hold the special meeting as planned. But McLaren says he still wanted to inform the community of the situation in person.
While we understand there may be questions regarding the facts and circumstances related to current ongoing employment matters occurring within the district, the board and the district cannot provide specific information regarding personnel matters, as this information is considered confidential under state law.
In his statement, McLaren says the district takes concerns for students, families, or staff seriously and appropriately addresses concerns consistent with legal requirements and best practices.
This includes investigating and working closely with outside legal counsel to evaluate any necessary and appropriate next steps. The board and the district consider the safety and well-being of our students and staff to be the highest priority and will continuously act in the best interest of our school community.
McLaren also thanked those present for their support and understanding. In a social media post Tuesday, the Atlantic Police Department said they've been made aware of an incident involving a school staff member and students, adding they were investigating the situation with assistance from the Cass County Sheriff's Office. However, the police department's post did not identify the employee under investigation. Iowa lawmakers are considering a bill taxing pipelines transporting liquid carbon dioxide. An Iowa Senate Ways and Means Subcommittee advanced Senate File 2069, which would impose a tax on a pipeline company at a rate of $2.50 per metric ton of carbon dioxide transported by the company within or through the state through a pipeline to any recipient located within or outside the state. The bill also reduces the tax to $1 per metric ton if the transported carbon dioxide is used for enhanced oil recovery. State Senator Dan Dawson says that while they could look at where exactly the rate should be, he's interested in having the state collect taxes from projects such as Summit Carbon Solutions' Midwest Express CO2 pipeline.
The state of Iowa has invested substantially in the ethanol industry. We've invested substantially into some of these other markets out here, right? And we can't just exempt things up front, let a bunch of revenue generate, and then all the monies that we spent on these things, nothing is ever returned back to taxpayers.
Summit's proposed pipeline would collect and transport carbon from Midwestern ethanol plants, with the Ames-based company registered in opposition to the bill. Summit lobbyist Jake Kentzner expressed concerns about the tax, leading to an increased cost of doing business.
Just like any other tax, it increases cost of doing business. And it increases the cost of the service we would provide our customers, which in our case is the ethanol plant producers. We'd rather see ethanol plant producers paying farmers more for their corn instead of paying for a new tax to the government.
Dawson, who is also chairman of the Senate Ways and Means Committee, questioned why Summit could get a carve-out. The Council Bluffs Republican says the company told the Iowa Utilities Commission the project was a public benefit.
You can't just say it's a public benefit and then have a declaration made by the IUC for eminent domain, and then the public doesn't benefit, right? Maybe that's just my point of view. People feel free to disagree on this, but we need to work through the mechanics on this, but I'm interested in this, and I think it's something at least worthy of the discussion.
Several pipeline opponents asked senators to focus instead on different bills centered around eminent domain and property rights, including Shelby County landowner Sherry Webb. Reading a letter from another impacted landowner in Summit's project, Webb says that if a tax is implemented, the revenue should go to the impacted landowners and county.
The affected counties will have the added expense when a pipeline ruptures and there is a disaster. And I've been saying it all along, it's not if, it's a when the pipeline ruptures or breaks. I agree with the fact that we are totally off on a distraction, that this meeting should be property rights, not a tax. I don't mind the tax business, but I think it should be a lot more than what they're asking.
State Senator Jason Schultz, a Republican from Schleswig, agreed with Dawson in moving the bill forward with possible tweaks to the rates. And with dueling carbon capture pipeline bills circulating the State House, one KMA land lawmaker is concerned over whether any action takes place on the issue this session. The proposal taxing carbon pipeline projects, you just heard, follows Senate Majority Leader Mike Klemisch's bill expanding the pipeline corridor, allowing companies to seek voluntary land use agreements within 5 miles of either side of a proposed pipeline or anywhere in a county where the pipeline company held an informational meeting. Now, State Senator Mark Costello tells KMA News reaction to Klemisch's proposal is mixed.
I do think it's mixed. I think most everybody thinks it's a step in the right direction. But the number of people don't think it goes far enough. They want to have a total ban on involuntary easements.
And legislation prohibiting the use of eminent domain in acquiring land for pipeline projects passed in both the Iowa House and Senate last session, as you'll recall. But it was vetoed by Governor Kim Reynolds. The Imogene Republican expresses concern that this session will pass without action on carbon sequestration projects.
I'm a little worried that nothing's going to get done because people insist on what the House has passed, the total ban on it for carbon pipelines, and what the Senate, well, I guess I'm going by our majority leader, his position is to do this. So he's the one that has proposed this bill. So I'm worried that nothing's going to happen if we don't have a little bit of heart to compromise a bit.
Though critics want eminent domain eliminated, Costello believes Summit Carbon Solutions' proposed Midwest Express pipeline project would benefit rural Iowa.
I've looked at this project a little bit more, and I do think it would be really good for Iowa. It would, you know, increase the market for our product. You know that we are an agricultural community, especially down our way. And I think in time that would be, you know, if we can get a higher prices because of a better market for our grain because of the carbon score that this would achieve.
Costello made his comments on KMA's Morning Line program. Negotiations are underway at the State House on public school funding for next fiscal year. One proposal advancing out of an Iowa Senate Education Subcommittee meeting Tuesday called for a 1.75% supplemental state aid increase. The per-pupil funding increase for K-12 students proposed by Senate Republicans is below Governor Kim Reynolds' 2% proposal and well below requests from groups such as the Iowa State Education Association, which calls for 5%. Nathan Arnold is with the Professional Educators of Iowa and was among several educators and groups expressing concerns over the 1.75% proposal. Arnold says while his group typically is not focused on funding, they have seen greater financial stress on public school districts, particularly in rural areas.
Our focus is more making sure the classroom environment is positive. That being said, I have seen some financial stress placed on a lot of our rural school districts. I do think that, in my opinion, rural school districts oftentimes, smaller districts produce a better educational environment. And often that school district is the center and pride of that small town community. When we put stress on it, those are going to tend to dissolve first.
Nathan Gibson is a school board member with the I-35 school district in Madison County. Gibson says proposals such as the 1.75% haven't kept up with the ever-increasing costs for school districts, ranging from utility bills to insurance for employees, particularly hampering rural districts like his.
Every year, our insurance benefits that come out of the general fund for our teachers, they go up and up. And unfortunately, we last year had to transfer some of that funding to costs to our teachers and staff because we just could not afford to pay for that. And it makes it really hard for us to compete with like Des Moines Public Schools and others who are offering full benefit packages. And it makes it difficult for us to recruit good teachers and retain good teachers in a rural school district.
Gibson added, while factoring in a projected statewide school enrollment decline of 173 students, the 1.75 SSA would account for less than 1% increase in the state budget. Democratic State Senator Herman Kurmbach says the SSA proposal is the latest in a years-long trend of underfunding public schools, not keeping up with the rate of inflation, and creating nightmare scenarios for school districts.
Classes that have had to be combined so that the students don't get as much individual attention, especially at lower grade levels when they're trying to learn to read. STEM teachers, science, technology, engineering, and math, that's a priority for our state, but STEM teachers leave and are not replaced. Online instruction, having to replace in-class teachers because they can't fill vacancies. We know how much problem online education was during the pandemic.
Republican State Senator Lynn Evans, who chaired the subcommittee, emphasized the SSA rate negotiations would continue. He says the Senate wanted to run the proposal as early as possible in an effort to meet the legislature's self-imposed deadline to pass a school funding package within 30 days of the governor issuing her budget proposal.
What I've heard loud and clear, and I think Senator Kramerich has heard as well when we're out talking to people in education, especially superintendents and school board members, that they want to know as early as possible. And having sat in that seat myself, I wanted to know as early as possible. So we're trying to get that out and get these negotiations started.
At least one KMA Land school administrator believes public education funding is reaching a crisis point in Iowa. Joe Erickson is superintendent of the Corning and Villisca school districts. Like other administrators, Erickson is watching developments at the State House, where lawmakers are attempting to hash out a per-pupil spending level for fiscal 2027. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Thursday morning, Erickson says either level would have different impacts on various school districts.
And looking where enrollment is at, in addition to other things, I think a 1.75% or 2%, that's still going to leave, especially Corning School District, district on our budget guarantee, leaving some of the load on our local property taxes to go ahead and pick up that expense to just keep us at 100% to keep us fully funded from 1 year to the next.
Though lawmakers say both levels are starting points for negotiations in a final SSA level, Erickson says either would make it hard for his districts to keep up with inflation, including insurance and curriculum costs.
I was just a little bit disappointed to go ahead and hear that's our starting point is 1.75 or 2% growth. Just would really ask our legislators and the governor to think about, are they going to help fund and help make sure that we are supporting public education, or do they feel like 2% is enough, even if that doesn't keep up with inflation?
The superintendent adds school districts must continue to rely on Secured Advanced Vision for Education or save dollars to cover purchases such as school buses and computer technology. Now, in the 2026 legislative session, the 30-day deadline to pass an SSA rate is February 12th, but there is no penalty if lawmakers are unable to reach a compromise before that date. Mills County officials this week terminated the employment of the county assessor. Ethan Hewitt has more.
By unanimous vote at its meeting on Friday, the Mills County Conference Board approved terminating the employment of County Assessor Christina Govig, effective February 19th. The board's action also included placing Govig on administrative leave until that effective date. The board's decision came after a closed session discussion on the matter. Comprised of the County Board of Supervisors, mayors, and school district representatives within the county, the Conference Board oversees the County Assessor's office, including the appointment of the assessor and other personnel and budget matters. County Auditor Amber Farnan confirmed to KMA News that Govig has requested a public hearing on the board's decision, which is set for February 18th at 3 p.m. in the boardroom at the courthouse. According to the notice of the public hearing, the purpose of the meeting is to receive public comment and statements following the board's decision to terminate Govig's employment contract. County Supervisors Chair Richard Crouch declined to comment further on the conference board's decision due to the discussion taking place in closed session. Ethan Hewitt reporting.
Page County officials are mulling over the loan bid received to replace the courthouse's hail-damaged roof and clock tower. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors reviewed a proposal for the project from Martino Commercial Roofing out of Omaha with a base bid of roughly $432,000 to replace the existing copper roof. The company's proposal also included an alternative to reclad the entire clock tower for just over $1 million. Reading from the company's bid document, Supervisors Chair Judy Clark outlined the proposed timeline for construction and unit prices.
If the bid is accepted, we will commence the work on 4/1/2026 and complete the work by the 22nd of July 2026. Complete the alternate work by the 13th of April 2027. The unit prices, remove, replace, deteriorated roof sheathing per square foot, $10 per square foot. Remove, replace, damaged metal gutter, $30 per lineal foot.
The discussion and proposed replacement effort followed the courthouse roof and the north side of the clock tower sustaining hail damage last summer. While there was some additional interest, Clark notes the Martino Commercial Roofing was the only bid submitted ahead of Tuesday's meeting.
Ibex pulled out. They had it all prepared and the owner pulled out. So, and the other one was Renaissance, and we thought they maybe were going to bid on the clock tower, but they did not.
County Auditor Kristen Wagoner notes the county insurance is willing to cover most, if not all, of the costs. But Vetter says the county will still want to run Martino Commercial Roofing's proposal by its insurance company before awarding the contract. In other business, the board also heard the annual Page County Fair Board report and funding requests. As the county's supervisors across the area continue and hammer out budget numbers for fiscal year 2027. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.